words.
May I? From your review, you're reserving 5 minutes for rebuttal, correct?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yes, sir. May it please the court. We submit that in the decision below, there are basically four fundamental reversible errors, all of which stem in large part from the erroneous conclusion of law by the court that a sandal is not a shoe. The court reached this conclusion sua sponte. It was never argued by the government below or in this court. And as a result of that, we had these four errors that follow. The first of them was the court disregarded additional U.S. Chapter Note 2, Note 2 to Chapter 64, which defines the term an issue, tennis shoes, basketball shoes, training shoes, gym shoes, and the like, as athletic footwear. Secondly, the court substituted a rule of construction, the justum generis, in lieu of the statutory definition, which was specifically enacted by Congress to define the term. Even if the third error was that even if...
The second error depends on the first error, the first data error.
That's
shoe horn is two for one.
That's right.
So it's really one and one act if you wanted to do it.
Indeed. And then the next error is in the application.
Most of the third error is the one you're doing now?
Yeah. The third error is the misapplication of the doctrine of the justum generis to the facts in this case. And finally, the fourth error is the finding that the imported merchandise was not a training shoe in the face of uncontradicted evidence to the fact that it is a training shoe.
Now that's because they said the sandal was not a shoe?
That's the only way I can conclude that the court came to that conclusion. He looked at the provision and came to the conclusion that training shoe, in order to be one, you must be a shoe. And if you're not a shoe, you can't be a training shoe. But otherwise, the facts establish that this article, whatever it is, if it's not a shoe, is used for training and is a training shoe.
Let's assume for purposes of argument that a basketball shoe is a shoe, and a sandal is a shoe, and a flip-flop is a shoe. You know what a flip-flop is?
Yes, I do.
Is the sandal closer to the basketball shoe or to the flip-flop?
This sandal is closer to the basketball shoe by reason of its construction. A flip-flop is a flimsy piece of rubber that could not be used in athletic activity. The soles of each...
someday you may represent a flip-flop, folks.
I wouldn't call it a
trick. Kids running around in flip-flops? I mean, they do all sorts of athletic things in flip-flops.
Well,
they used to ride rafts up and down in Colorado in flip-flops until your client came along.
But actually, the...
Right? That's the testimony... The client came along is because the flip-flop fell off.
That's right.
And they were shoeless.
But they were... The reason they fell off is they were not an athletic shoe. They were a casual shoe that was being used in an athletic purpose. And that's why Mark Thatcher...
Not a ballet thing that the ballerinas were.
A ballerina's...
Is that closer to a basketball shoe or to a sandal?
I think the ballerina shoe is less...
toe shoe. You know, it's got the metal toe end and it's got the straps around the ankle and allows them to stand up on their toe.
Yes.
That's a shoe, no question about it.
Without a doubt. So I guess the point, if I understand the question, I'm trying my best to answer it, is the sandal is far closer to a basketball shoe than a ballet slipper.
Well, the way I sort of understood what the judge was saying at the end when he said, well, it's not a shoe, what he meant was it's not a shoe the way the basketball, the way the exemplars in the note are shoes. They're saying, well, there are all kinds of shoes, and if you look in the dictionary, my goodness, slippers, they're shoes, all kinds of things. Basically, anything goes on your foot is a shoe.
Well, I don't think that's what the judge said. I think he said flat out,
right,
a sandal cannot be a shoe. And once you come to that conclusion, it's pretty tough.
And if I were to give him the benefit of the doubt, say, well, it's kind of sloppy language, but basically he was doing a justum generis analysis saying there's a whole category of shoes. And in that whole panorama of shoes, I think that the sandals are not, they don't meet the test of the exemplars that are shoes in the note that you're trying to get into.
Well, I that's an interpretation.
I understand.
But that's true.
And I'll give you your point. I mean, it's just, I don't know that I built my entire case around the fact that the trial judge said that your sandals are not a shoe.
Oh, most certainly we're not. We're just saying that if you look at that conclusion, it poisons the rest of the conclusions in the case.
Right, I'm just suggesting that there's a way of reading the opinion to remove the poison and then come back to the fundamental issue, which is, was the interpretation of the note 2 correct? That is to say that your theory is too broad, it brings in too much as athletic shoes. And under your theory, the flip-flop gets classified the same place as your sandals do, and the ballet slippers get classified in the same place as your sandals do, and aren't there anything that goes on the foot gets in there? Because under your interpretation, there's no real requirement of athleticism associated with the thing in order to get it into note two.
Your Honor, if that's the impression you're getting from my argument, that's not the argument. The argument is you don't get into athletic shoes unless you have something that is designed and constructed and commercially meant to be an athletic shoe, bought, sold, or marketed as such. So I would not...
Well, your trial got you. I mean, at when they gave you the full trial on whether or not, based on the customs ruling,
right,
I'm terribly sorry these sandals are not used in athletic endeavor, and you went to trial in California, New York, and you slammed up, you won on that day. And absolutely, these things are used for that purpose.
Yes. And, well, of course, I think you've articulated at the outset what we really are saying is our prime argument, that the statutory note is what drives this case, and it had to be followed.
If you don't, if you lose on that, then we're going to go to Houston Generous for sure, aren't we?
Yep, absolutely.
Right.
And if you go there, we're saying that the sandals, and we proved it at trial, have the characteristics and purposes of all of the other articles, which is namely, the uniting factor in all of them is that they're athletic footwear. And
well, yet, that's
so we're doing that every type of footwear that can be used in athletics would be covered?
I would not make that argument. That's too easy. It requires much, much more. It has to be shown that the article is designed for athletic purposes, that it contains features, such as the tennis court sandal had, that make them designed for athletic use. And when
for any athletic use. So you can
yes.
use a team of footwear for playing basketball.
Absolutely.
Do you think it's not designed for that particular purpose?
That's right. But it's designed for athletic use.
Well, what the judge did against you was to say, well, when I look at the exemplar, they've all got structure that restrains and contains the toes, and they've got structure that retains and contains the heels.
And your
sandals don't have those two features.
I would disagree with that, Your Honor. That's what the whole patent was about. And there's endless testimony to the effect that the shoe is
if I was playing basketball in your client's shoes and some big guy stomped my toes, is there anything between his foot and my toe when he does the stomping?
No, Your Honor.
So I really take a whack. Now, in a basketball shoe, you might want to find in front a layer of rubber and maybe a few other things
right.
between his foot and my toe.
Right. But as
so
we
there's a difference.
Certainly there's a difference. It's not designed as a basketball shoe. It could be used to play basketball because...
The reason why I raise it, that as I understood how the trial judge applied to use the generous test, was he said, I'm going to look at what I think are the essential characters and qualifications of the four exemplars, I think. And he said, what do they all have in common? And they all have in common, among other things, that they restrain the toe and they restrain the heel.
And the Teva sports sandal does that. There is testimony from all of the plaintiff's witnesses that the shoe is designed, you end up with a custom-made shoe. These straps, and that's what the whole patent is about. the straps on that shoe, and we demonstrated it on my foot at trial, where witness McGuire, and that's in the appendix to the record, shown how the straps are put on the foot so that you cannot move your foot in that shoe. That coupled with the sole itself, there's no slipping. So it is that design that makes an athletic shoe that doesn't move around. And that's how they can jump around on poles, how they can go jogging through mountains and creeks. There's testimony where in one of these extreme events, where after 3 days...
You get a lot of rocks kicked in. If you're running behind somebody, they kick all the rocks up and get your toe.
It would hurt. I'm sure it would. But they do run on them. They've run marathons in them. As one of the witnesses said, who trains in them regularly, if I'm doing a lot of land exercise, and it's an event with land and water, but most of it's land, I'm going to use traditional jogging shoes. But if I'm in an event, and some of these events involve that, where you're bouncing around beaches and creeks and mountains, where there's a lot of water, most of the time I'm going to use the toe sandals.
Some
Tigre
sandals now have toes and heels.
Yes, they absolutely. They're still open, but they're much more closed.
But they protect the toes from being crushed by rocks and rivers.
Well, any time you cover the toes, you're going to get some additional protection, to be sure.
I can guarantee that.
Mr. Gill, you're into your rebuttal time now. Do you want to save the rest?
I would, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll hear from the government then. Ms. Powell?
Please, the court. The trial court's decision should be affirmed for several reasons. First, we believe that the trial court properly applied the justum generis doctrine to interpret the statute at issue. What the trial court did was essentially look at the language of the statute and determine that it fell squarely within the justum generis rule. It has a number of exemplars followed by a general word or phrase.
Right, but you don't get to that unless you disagree with your adversary on the meaning of note 2.
Yes, we definitely disagree.
You better call it that.
Okay. The government's interpretation, our interpretation of the note, let me start with the purpose of the note. The purpose of the note is to alleviate the need for customs to do a search and inquiry as to whether footwear that comes in is used for certain athletic purposes. Specifically, the purposes that are mean in the title provision.
A basketball shoe doesn't lose coverage of a basketball shoe because Woody Allen likes to wear it with his tuxedo.
True. And we believe that that is the purpose of the note. So therefore, the note, you utilize the justum generis interpretation along with the note. And in this case, the court's judgment didn't run afoul of the note because the court didn't take into account whether the sandals were used for a particular sport or not. Another reason why we disagree with appellate.
Why would it be a functionality test? Is it a functionality test that you can only use it for athletic purposes and certain athletic purposes? So the tennis shoes and basketball shoes and gym shoes, training shoes, define a particular function?
It's a functionality test, but I think the task provision requires something else. As the court had noted previously, if it was just functionality limited to athletic purposes, then any kind of shoe where one claims they use it for an athletic purpose would fall into the category. The provision, yes, it's function. It's used as a gym shoe, training shoe, basketball shoe, but it also has to, for our purposes, have some sort of resemblance. It has to have an enclosed upper.
How helpful is that phrase in note 2 saying whether or not the principal use such athletic needs and purpose. Is that a restriction on the language?
I think the effect of that language is essentially to assist customs when the merchandise comes in so that it doesn't have to do a search and inquiry. I'm not sure if it's a restriction, more or less more instruction.
You're saying it's a reason for the note. They put the note in so that people at customs would know that they don't have to ask whether the basketball shoe was going to be used by the Boston Celtics or by Ray Clement.
True. And I think that goes...
I think that's what you told me a minute ago.
Yes, yes. And that actually, to dovetail on that, if the appellant's interpretation of the note was correct, then they were...
Everything under the sun.
Everything under the
sun. Any athletic endeavor.
Right, and you would also have to go back and still do some sort of test. According to them, if it's athletic footwear, it has to be designed, constructed, marketed as such. So if you accept the appellant's interpretation, you sort of make the note, take the teeth out of the note. You make the customs go back and do the same sort of inquiry that the note says that customs doesn't have to do.
And so that's your argument as to why the trial court didn't care by stopping its analysis right at note 2 and instead went to Houston Generals, right?
Yes.
Now, you've heard your adversary argue that if you're right, that he still wins, his client still wins, because your adversary believes that the trial court didn't apply the Houston Generals test correctly.
The way I understand the appellant's argument is that the sandals... The argument is that the sandals are Justin Generis because they are worn or function as athletic footwear. Again, we think if you look at the note...
I thought what he was saying was he concedes that there's no covering of the toe, and he concedes that there's no covering of the heel, and he says, so what? From a Justin Generis point of view, so what? Because the evidence shows that... he is just as much an athletic shoe as a basketball shoe. In fact, he thinks you can play basketball in his sandals.
Our position is that it's actually not a so what. If you look at the exemplars, yes, you can do athletic activities in them, but it's much more. That's not dispositive of the issue. If you look at them, the example is, do you have a covered toe, covered heel, covered side? So yes, the imported sandals are going to share some characteristics with the exemplars, but those characteristics aren't dispositive. The essential characteristic, our position is, the enclosed protective upper.
Fundamental error, according to your adversary, which shows how far disconnected the current international trade was from reality here, is that the trial judge says a sandal is not a shoe. Right?
Yes.
We know that a sandal is a shoe, don't we?
Yes, we do. Yeah.
So how are we going to deal with a trial court who seems to premise some of his decision on the grounds that the sandal, although is not a shoe.
Although the trial court didn't explain its analysis, it did, in its opinion, include a signal right after its conclusion that says essentially a sandal is not a shoe, and that those references actually include references to defendants' trial exhibits. Certain of them, which were pictures of the exemplars, and the court then references the government's witness's trial testimony, and then says, compare that with the sandals. So essentially, yes, the court said a sandal is not a shoe, but the way the government reads it, when it looks at this additional citation here, it's saying, and look, there's the comparison. All these shoes have covered toes and heels. Compare that with the sandals. They are open shoes. That's how we interpret the court's judgment of holding.
If we have all those examples, exhibits that are cited on page 9 of the trial court's opinion, where he said, again, there is going to be a little doubt that the term shoe doesn't cover the tibias. Do we have those things in the record here?
I'm not sure about, I assume we have the plaintiff's exhibits 1, 2, and 3, and defendant's exhibits N, because I know that the whole trial record was forwarded to the court.
We've got exhibit 1, 2, 3, and defendant's N, we have.
I think you should have them, if everything from the trial was forwarded to the court. With respect to the citation to New York trial to page 13 to 23, that's actually in the joint appendix. It's the Hamill testimony. And if you look at the pages, the page numbers that are actually on the top right, that's what it's actually citing to, 13 through 23. What you don't have...
What does that say? Do you have a recollection of what the substance of pages 13 to 23 are?
Sure. In sum, Dr. Hamill testified. First, he explained what the function of the particular shoes were. Then he went through and differentiated the different types of items that are found in the shoe, a heel counter, a toe pad, ridge around the outside, and compared that to the sandals, which didn't have that kind of those kind of components, and concluded what the effect of not having those components were. And let me back up. With respect to defendant's exhibit B1, 2, 3, and 4, you should have those too if they're part of the court record.
Well, I don't know. You're saying we have the... I'm not sure the physical exhibits have been transported to us.
Okay. I assume that everything was transferred. I'm not sure.
No, we just get, as a regular matter, we just get the appendix material unless something is specifically sent by one of the parties, I think. We can ask for it if we need it, it's not with us, but I don't think we have physical exhibits now.
I'm sorry, I wasn't aware. I thought everything was transferred.
Unless I missed it, maybe you can hear from this.
Okay. If you need that material, I'm happy to reach for our office to forward it to you.
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Lee, you have, I guess, about 3.5 minutes of your rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just to get back to the note, which is at the heart of this case, as far as we can see, additional note 2 does 3 things. Not the government would have you believe it does 1 thing. It does 3 things. It defines the term tennis shoes, basketball shoes, etc., and calls them athletic footwear. It excludes from that definition certain kinds of sports footwear in note 1, the cleated type articles and things of that nature. And finally, it relaxes the principal use requirement. It does all 3 of those things. To accept the government's interpretation is to write out of the statute the first thing that it does. And why did Congress do that? Because it was handed a 6-digit term in the harmonized system, the international system, and it was not satisfied with leaving it alone. So Congress said, no, we're going to give you the definition of what that term means. And what that term means is A, B, C, and D, and the articles like it are athletic footwear. If it's athletic footwear, it goes into that box. If it's not, it doesn't. And I
that would be so. You would say that's so, even though there was a very specific category for a very specific type of shoe. For example, if I go to the harmonized schedule and hunt around and I find there's absolutely a line item for ballet shoes, it would still fall where you want your sandals.
If it was a line item at the same level, the levels are very critical. So if it was a line item at the same level, then you'd have to decide which one's more specific. But if they're not, and that's what Rule 3 is, General Rule 3 is all about. But in this case, we don't get past general rule of interpretation one. If a chapter number defines something and puts it into that box, that's the end of the discussion. And that's what Congress did in this case. It didn't leave it to chance. It said, we're going to say that that provision covers all athletic footwear. It's as simple as that. That's what they did.
I can show that galoshes are used in show snuggling contests. They would fit into it.
I don't think so, because you'd have to still establish the use and the design for use as athletic footwear, and that's not the case with a galosh. Any fugitive use, you could fugitively use any shoe.
Suppose if the galoshes had spikes on the bottom, it would go out under the subheading
of
one,
right? That's right. So the real point of the case, I think, is at the heart of this thing, no matter what all else is said, we had a disregard of a statute that's clear on its face by the trial court, compounded by a finding that the sale is not a shoe. And you have to look at what that did to his thinking. He looks at the provision, he sees shoe, 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 and shoe. Congress could not have meant something that's not a shoe to go in there. Congress said what it said, and the job of the courts is to give full effect and full force of effect, and in this case, that would require a classification claim. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Gill. The case is submitted, and that concludes this morning's sitting.
All rise.